Hello, friends. Welcome to the C3 podcast. I'm your host and co-creator, Myron Isaiah Bryant. Thank you for taking the time to listen and being a part of our community. At its core, C3 exists to create a safe space for us all to be humans first, learn from each other's professional and life experiences, and choose to co-create a healthy community of betterment. I'm excited for today's conversation with our guest. And with that, let's dive into the episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the C3 podcast with Myron Bryant. I'm super excited to connect with one of my longtime friends, Connie, today, who I've known since entering tech years ago, working in success and solutions engineering, has been literally a mentor of mine and someone who I've learned a ton from. So can't be more excited to connect with Connie today and share just her journey, her values, and what she learned along the way. With further ado, welcome, Connie. How are you doing?
Thanks, Myron. I'm good. Happy to be here. So honored you invited and asked me to be a host or a guest. Sorry.
It's funny. I oftentimes allude to what we talked to before the pressing like record. So we talked about the whole like co-creator thing. Yeah. And I use the word co-creator intentionally because like I feel like we're creating it with the guests on the podcast and the listeners and everyone. But I know we were joking about this before we press record. It's literally just me and a bunch of AI tools, right? You are the co-creator, Connie. Whoever is a guest is truly the co-creator. So yeah, you're a host too.
I'll take the credit.
You're a host. I'm the guest here. Well, I can't be more excited for today's conversation. And, you know, we always talk about making a very human-centered podcast, right? We'll get to your journey, your values and lessons along the way and dive into some different things there. But first and foremost, who is Connie for those who don't know you?
Yeah. I'll start with like, I feel like the boilerplate basic explanation of like marital status, family, all that stuff. So I'm married. And then I have a lovely daughter. Her name is Lily. She's about 17 months or like a year and 5 months. And then our first child is our dog, Luca. We've had him since he was a puppy. He's turning 10 this year, which is crazy. So that's personal out of the way. We live in New York right now. We've been here for like the past 2 years. And then I don't find this interesting, but I feel like it's less common than you think. Maybe not as weird, I guess, in tech. But anyway, I've moved around a bit. So I was actually born in Salt Lake, Utah, which not a lot of people know. So I have this like weird identity crisis of like, do I call Houston my hometown or do I call Salt Lake? Even though I moved when I was like in kindergarten. Anyway, grew up in Houston, the suburbs technically, and went to school there. And then I moved to Cincinnati, Ohio for my first job out of college, and then eventually moved after a few years to Portland, Oregon for 10. And then obviously most recently relocated to New York. So that is me personally, at least in a nutshell.
I love it. This is why I love this podcast. There's been many times where things have come out where I was like, I didn't know that about you. And these are people I've known for many times, a decade or more. And it's like, wait a minute, I have to have a podcast for you to tell me these things.
It's like,
where did it come up at, right? I mean, I knew you were like raised in Houston, but I know you were born in Salt Lake. So that's pretty cool.
Super random. I have an older brother who's 2 years older, and he was born in Houston, but then my dad relocated for work to Salt Lake City, Utah. Being in Houston, he was in oil and gas, and I guess there's a lot of oil and gas in Salt Lake. But we were there for a few years, I think. So, so I spent like kindergarten and my formative years all in the suburbs of Houston.
Very controversial question. Where's been the favorite place you lived? You've mentioned some good spots.
Gosh, I know. Favorite. Well, it's hard to say because, well, I guess like also.
Good answer.
Yeah. Portland, because there are certainly things that I miss about Portland, like access to wine country, access to like the beach, like there's so much outdoor stuff and we have a ton of like great friends that still live there. But I like when we moved, I was definitely ready to move. And I've really enjoyed New York so far. I feel like the pace, the people, the vibe is very much like, I think, more my speed than maybe the West Coast. But every city has kind of served a special place. So, but would I ever move back to any of those places? Probably not. So I don't know if that throws a wrench in my answer.
Hey, life is so weird. It's like many times you appreciate places where you live there and then you stop appreciating and then you move and you're like, oh, yeah. I missed this part, but I don't know if I want to go back. Like, yeah. I think that's everyone's experience.
Yeah, it's always there to visit. So I appreciate that part of it.
Visiting is the way to go. You know the hot spots to hit and you know where to stay away from.
Exactly.
And you mentioned some awesome things, right, in terms of like your journey, with just life as a whole and then getting into tech there. So what has been your journey, right, in starting out in Houston, breaking into tech? What does that look like from overall perspective of you?
Yeah, well, like I don't like love that I, like sometimes work feels like my identity, but I do feel like a lot of what I've done has been in preparation for the career that I've kind of established. So
yeah.
I'll personally get over that at some point. But yeah, so kind of starting with my formative years, I went to school in Texas, went to college in Texas, really thought I would never leave. And then I graduated in the peak of like the real estate bubble. So it was like 2009. And I feel like no companies were hiring. If anything, it was kind of like the most recent layoffs in tech. It was just like, companies were not hiring and they were really going to career fairs just to kind of maintain that relationship. A little bit of an aside. Yeah. But anyway, I landed a job actually at General Mills. So I, like many other tech people, did not start in tech right out the gate. Eventually transitioned into it. But how I got to tech. So I was at General Mills. I joined this like entry level college grad program. I feel like a lot of big companies have it, but essentially it was a program where you had to do various rotations and they essentially mapped out your like career progression for you. And I totally thought I had it made. It was great. I got a company car. I was like, this is awesome. I did have to move to Cincinnati, Ohio, which was a blessing in disguise. It's certainly not anywhere on a map that I would find myself wanting to move to, but I learned a lot about myself and I also actually met my husband there. So I guess that's like a definite perk. But that same company moved me to Portland, Oregon for a role. And I actually ended up getting laid off. And so that experience was also, I feel like, such a pivotal moment in my career because it was just such a bad fit, I think, for my personality. And, you know, like I have no bad things to say about the company itself. I think just the structure and what I needed at that time from a development and growth standpoint just really didn't align with what General Mills had to offer for me. So anyway, all of that to say, I complained about my job to anyone who would listen. And in Portland, I had a lot of friends that worked in tech. And Portland has like a pretty big, I would say, tech scene. I think they've called it like the Silicon Forest or something. Anyway, when they heard me complain about my experience at General Mills, I was like, it just feels really old school. It's very hierarchical. They were like, we think you like tech. Would you consider moving into tech? And I was like, I don't know, I guess. And if I hadn't have been laid off, I don't think I would have ever entertained the idea. So yeah, a layoff turned into an opportunity for me to explore jobs in tech. And that's how I got into tech.
I love that story. One, so many people that I talk with, similar to you and even myself as well, like didn't target tech to make sense. Like it's very rarely you see people who have a tech degree and like do certain things to land in tech. And that's amazing when you do see it. But many of the people that I connect with in day to day, some of you, whether it be through different job changes or whatever there may be, like kind of land in tech. So that's consistent. I think there's this mystical perception of tech. And I just want to tell people who aren't in tech that maybe are interested that many of us got here from interesting ways. And it's interesting asking people how, and that's why we ask it on this podcast.
Yeah. I mean, you're totally right. Like it's never, I like went to college for a tech degree. Like I don't even think that was a thing. I mean, I was actually just thinking about this, like the majors that were offered at my college there were five in the business school. It was finance, accounting, marketing, management, and I guess like information systems, which maybe overlaps with tech, but totally agree. Yeah. I mean, like I wasn't, you know, a childhood, or I wasn't a kid being like, I want to work in tech when I grow up. I just kind of stumbled upon it, but it's the best kept secret, I feel like. And especially, I feel like the role I'm in, like the solution engineering role, I think is also the best kept secret, which is not even really a secret. It's just like not a lot of people know about it, but yeah. I digress.
And you mentioned the SE role there, which I, again, it's where we met and I learned a lot from you there. You were actually my mentor, or what we call Trail Guide, the organization we worked with there. And I still learn a lot from you to this day. I think there's many reasons why you've excelled at that role, right? From you've had a sales background before being a solution engineer. So that was a huge from a perspective of knowing what the goal is, but you're also amazing at storytelling and talking that value there. Those are different values or techniques I see the best SEs show, but I'm always curious, again, making it human, you know, what have been just your life or personal values that have enabled you to be successful throughout your journey so far?
Yeah. So when I was thinking about like, what are the core values that really drive me and just help me know I think I'm like on the right path or help me make decisions, the first that comes to mind, which I feel like sounds cheesy, but I'm going to say it anyway, is just like doing the right thing. Like I feel like all of these life lessons always sound so basic, but I would say first is definitely doing the right thing. And it's always been something that I've lived by, but I don't think it's something that it kind of clicked until I think I was having a conversation with my husband about like, I don't know what to do in this situation. And like, this is how so-and-so is handling it, but I feel like it needs to be handled this way. And I remember my husband just kind of like flipping the question back to me. And he was like, well, what's the right thing to do? And I was like, this is my life mantra. Like, this is how I make decisions in life and how I really, I think like just, it's like my North Star. So I would say that's definitely number one. I also value inclusion and trust. I know those two things aren't necessarily related, but I guess they're kind of adjacent. But trust for me is huge. What that means to me is really just like delivering on what you say you're going to do, or I don't know, just having this level of authenticity, I guess, where you have this like reciprocal trust between two people or even like a group of people. And, you know, it's not like I expect people to immediately be able to trust me out the gate. I totally get that too. But I think like when you get to that right level, that inherently is kind of, I think, how I would like to carry myself and how I try to carry myself. And then inclusion too. I think, you know, growing up, especially in the suburbs of Houston, I was always like the only Asian person in school, which I feel like a lot of people get surprised by that because when they think of Houston, they think of like the metropolitan area. But I grew up like 30 miles outside of proper Houston, even though I technically was like, I think our address said Houston. But anyway, kind of like tying back to my backstory, I was always kind of the odd person out. But I feel like was kind of like bucketed with my non-Asian friends is like, oh, well, you're not, you know, Hispanic or you're not Black. So you're just kind of like us. And like, I feel like that almost is like counter to inclusion. But anyway, that was a little bit of a tangent too, but inclusion, like just making sure people feel included, but also recognized for, you know, the unique values that they bring, I think are really important. And that's something that I try to do with any new people that I meet, especially in like a work setting too. So And then the final one I would say is just like building relationships. You know, when I recently was going through a job search, I actually hired, or I guess like I got a career counselor, and I was just like, I really want to make sure I'm thoughtful with this new like step I take in my career. And I remember like really not being sure how to articulate what my superpowers were. And I think in just our conversations, what she read back to me was that like, I really value relationships. And I think especially in the field of solution engineering or solution consulting, or even sales in general, the foundation of a solid sale is a solid relationship. And so, I don't know how I really like live by that core value, but it's very important to me. So those I would say are my three. And I feel like things in threes always sounds nice.
They always do sound nice to have at least three, right? Yeah. Once you start getting like five or six, is like, that's too many to do. Yeah. Actually, this is an amazing story that you brought up, because at some point, and this is one of those things, harkening back to before we press record today, a lot of my mentors have been on this podcast, or are going to be. So one of the things that helped me include values as an important part is in college, I had a professor, Dr. Hoekstra, who's hopefully going to be on here one day. It was engineering course. I think it was like Principles of Engineering. And all these like technical courses you take engineering, it was literally just a class for him to share his experience.
Yeah.
And the amazing things he did in a bunch of different roles. And he has like won awards for engineering. He's won awards for like artistry. Like he actually does like actual real art. He's gotten awards for that. And just his life lessons. And one of the most impactful exercises I did in my entire college career was he gave us all a sheet of paper, and it had like maybe 30 or 40 like values on there, and everything was positive, right? It's like, oh, creativity, or like development, or growth, or family, or like all these positive things, so that you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
So he's like, circle the top 20 that you like here. So you like put half out.
Yeah.
And then he's like, okay, circle the top 10. Okay, this is kind of hard. Okay, circle the top 5. And you're like, okay, this is really hard. Circle the top 3. I was like, okay, now I'm like, I'm dying.
We're kind of the same. So like, they're kind of fun.
Right? It was such a hard thing. And like, ultimately what he said, it was kind of what we like harken on with each episode, and what you kind of started your conversation off with, is like, that value is like your filter, right? So you have to understand how you navigate life and what you value. And ultimately for his conversation for us as impersonable college students was, if you ever have a disagreement with someone and you realize it's going down to a value level, like you have to stop, because you're not going to change someone's values.
I mean, that's a mature thing to train in college. I feel like I'm just now learning that. So I could have probably taken that course. Like that's a life lesson right there.
Hands down, the best course I took in engineering school had nothing to do with engineering. It had to do with values. and to your point, college. Relationships. Oh, so no, that was a long rant about values, but I appreciate, you know, as you mentioned, doing the right thing. That is a very clear filter of like, hey, some people have different things they want to do within relationships and working together, but hey, if this isn't the right thing, then that's not going to be what I want to focus on. And you talked about, you know, the inclusion part as well. That's really big for me as well. I know I've had a pretty diverse set of hosts or guests, as you want to call it, yeah, on this podcast. And that was all very intentional. I was blessed to be the girl up in pretty inclusive and diverse environment. I want to be to make sure we're providing spaces for that too.
I love it.
In terms of just that transition into tech, what was that like for you, right? You mentioned starting at GM, moving into tech. Was this big a jump, or was it as different as people maybe make it seem as it is? Or were there some areas that you feel like you learn some powerful lessons that allow you to be successful in that jump?
Yeah. I think the caveat I would give is that I am the type of learner that learns through experience. And while I came in with years of professional experience, I felt like a lot of it honestly was, well, I don't know, maybe I haven't like thought a ton about it, but I feel like a lot of it wasn't an immediate obvious translation into tech sales. So that was probably the biggest challenge for me, of the learning curve from going from selling to a massive, you know, grocery chain, like at headquarters. And the line of work I did, while it was labeled sales, it was very much like merchandise strategy. So how do we put specific General Mills cereal brands on sale to boost sales throughout the entire year? So that was a big part of the job that I did. Or how do we bring in new SKUs, and which ones do we turn over that aren't doing so well? So it's like crazy. I kind of remember all of that. But anyway, all that to say, I still learned a lot of soft skills in that role, but I don't think I've recognized the value of that until, you know, years later. So to answer your actual question of like, how was the transition? It was hard. I mean, I aimed for what I thought was a lateral move. So my title when I was still at General Mills was account manager. So I interviewed at this tech company through an intro to an account manager role. Cause I was like, oh, the job description, like you manage relationships and, you know, you focus on renewing the contract. Like this all makes sense to me. And as I was going through the interview process, I quickly realized like, I have no idea what they're talking about. And so what I appreciated about the first tech company I worked for is they saw something in me and they took a chance on me. And I wasn't offered the account manager role because that would have been setting me up for failure. But they were like, hey, we'll bring you on as an entry level, pretty much like an SDR or like a sales development rep, to just learn the ropes, get comfortable with kind of like what the typical talk track is. And then we can eventually get you promoted into, you know, like an account manager or an AE role. So I was like, okay, cool. You know, and like, I mean, I was laid off. So I was like, I will take any job that I can take. Sounds great. Sign me up. And I ended up joining with a few other people. They were guys, so I can say guys. A few other guys that also were transitioning out of like external industry. So that actually also helped with my like integration into tech, because it's like, we all were experienced. We weren't like fresh out of college. There was one college grad, but he was like pretty mature for his age. But anyway, all that to say, like that made the transition a lot easier. But I mean, it was a grind. Like, I don't know. I think you've been in SDR before, right?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was just like smile and dialing. And it's hard when you come in with experience because you're like, I have more experience. I have like more to give and more like strategic ideas to bring to the table than just like cold calling people and asking them if they're interested in setting up a meeting. But anyway, all that to say, what I appreciated. So, well, I guess a little bit of an aside to that story is, one of my reps actually identified like I was a bit overqualified for that role. And he was like, hey, my wife works at this other tech company. You would be a great fit for the team she's hiring for. So do you want to interview? So like, this is also, again, to make it full circle, why I value relationships so much, because every opportunity I've had in tech, both within a company or outside of it, has been because of some existing relationship or some connection that I've already had from that trust and just like relationship I've built. So a little bit of an aside, but to also encourage the value relationships piece. But anyway, so I joined another tech company into customer success, and I was a CSM or customer success manager. And that was also equally hard because while I felt the title was appropriate for my experience, like I had never been an account manager or CSM for a tech company. So all that to say, and to tie it back to my comment earlier about like I learned through experience, it really took me those formative like 2-3 years at that tech company to understand a full cycle, to understand the types of conversations I should be having with existing customers, and like what are the types of things that existing customers want to talk about, and how do you frame up a renewal without just being like, hey, do you want to renew? It's like 90 days out. So yeah, hopefully that answers the question, but I feel like while it was hard, like I've gotten comfortable with like almost a lack of structure and just like throwing us to the fire and like hoping we figure it out. And I eventually figured it out. So I think I did at least.
I think you more than figured it out, because you've taught me things along the way that have been helpful for me for a while. I was like, wait, what are we doing here? I couldn't agree more about the like SDR, BDR role. Like that was the hardest role I've had in my career. Cause to your point, especially if you've come in from a full cycle sales closing role, you know, scenario, like you're like, dude, I just smile and dial all day. There's so much I can't control. Like my AEs are the ones closing business. So
yep.
It's a very big jump, but I think it's also probably the position I learned the most from, and or set me up for the most success long-term in tech, because I've seen people who, you know, they were able to go from not tech account management or sales to tech account management and sales. And it is a big jump to go from that. It is a big jump. You talked about the relationships too, and I'm happy you called out the connection there from the job movement perspective, because I was going to say that's a value. You definitely did it. And that really is, I think, you know, I talk a lot about the book. I think I've said it on almost every episode so far, Sales is Human, right? Of me going from engineering, learning these value things in my class with Dr. Hoekstra to understanding that I value like relationships and connecting with people and helping them solve problems in unique ways as well. And that perspective of relationships is a sales process, right? And people can put the sales as a bad word or not, right? That's what that book kind of talks about. Mm-hmm. But you're trying to solve a problem for this person and you're using that relationship to be mutually beneficial. And that's 100%. How it sounds like you were able to navigate your career. And frankly, for myself, whether similar to you, right? Whether it be SE or success or AE, like you're always going to be trying to figure out what that team needs and how you can fit the need of that team. Just like in a sales process, you're trying to figure out what organization needs, how you can fit the needs of that organization or anything else you're talking about in life.
I mean, I could not agree anymore. And I think people underestimate the level of critical thinking that's required with sales. This just reminds me of, again, I was just like reflecting on my college experience and like, how did I end up with the degree that I ended up with? So I didn't share this earlier, but I have a finance degree. And
what? I didn't know this either.
I don't use it. But I remember when I was choosing my major, like business made the most sense because at the time when I graduated, it's like, well, okay, what can get me the most money and what has like the biggest and broadest like range of opportunity? So it's like, okay, business that wouldn't require, you know, like an extra 4 years, like law school or med school. And so business made the most sense. And then with all of the majors, when I was narrowing it down, I actually thought I wanted to be an accountant, which I took my first like accounting weed out class and did not do so well. So I was like, maybe not. But I always was really good at math. And so I was like, oh, maybe finance. And then in my mind, I promise there's a point to this. In my mind, though, marketing and management were the two other options alongside information service or systems or whatever. And I remember I was like, well, management and marketing, like that's so broad. Like if I had an accounting or finance degree, I could totally do sales, but at least I'd have this like more specialized degree. So I share that because I picked finance as my like major, even though I didn't use it. And then I ended up landing in a sales role. And I always thought and told myself like, ooh, I'm more on the introverted side. Like I, you know, I'm not like schmoozy and I don't like networking and like, you know, I can't just strike up a conversation with a stranger because I feel like that's the perception sales gives off. And what I've appreciated about like social media and like more of this awareness is that like sales is not that. And what you've just described of the relationship building and also that trust and also just identifying a problem and solving for that, like, I mean, that's like executives' jobs too, like as simple as it sounds. And so I feel like the higher up you go, like just the more importance, like your sales and influential skills are. So
yeah,
totally agree with that whole rant that I went on.
And it's such a human thing is what I took away from that, right? Is like, you made a decision knowing who you were, right? The skills you had, you were good at math. You made a decision knowing, hey, this is what I think I want to do. This is the things I don't want to do. Mm-hmm. Hey, like, I consider myself a bit more introverted, which I do too as well. You'd be surprised how many people who are in sales consider themselves more introverted. It's like,
well, the perception is self. Yeah.
Dude, I'm like, dude, okay. This is why I love podcasts as well. Man. We're telling all the secrets.
Yes.
Cause we can have some very, very cool direct conversations, right? That, you know, you can't always have if you just hang out with friends, you go to a bar, whatever you do with your friends, right? Like for instance, I texted my best friend from college just earlier today. And we were talking about like, we send each other voice messages and like how much we appreciate each other's friendship because within the span of 3 to 4 minutes, we talk about everything from what's going on in life to mental health, to emotional, spiritual health, to video games, to what's going on in sports. And I love that because it reflects this podcast because you're able to just be yourself and jump to these different things that incorporate life without feeling like, oh, like I'm at a park, so I'm at a bar, so I have to just talk about surface level stuff, or like I'm in a sales conversation, I have to talk about whatever. Like yeah. The more you're authentic into yourself, like valuing inclusion and in relationships, the more you can be yourself and just talk about whatever's on your mind, dude. If you can't, if you're leaving things off, like mental health or whatever, like it's like, is that really a friendship? So yeah.
100%. Well, what you just described also reminds me of all the memes of, it's like people holding their phone up with like the million like voice notes, and it's the
yes.
Voice, like listening to my best friend's voice notes as if it's a podcast. And so we have manifested that.
We have, that was the podcast, was those voice notes. Everyone's like, oh, Myra, you're doing some cool stuff for the community. It's like, no, I'm just talking to my friends. I'm on voice notes.
Real time.
I'm sharing them the voice notes with the world.
Yes.
In terms of just, you know, lessons you learned along the way, right? What were some of the lessons you learned from some of the specific roles? Would that be from, you know, success or SE? What were some of the main takeaways you had?
Yeah, I love this question, because when you say lessons, I immediately think about, okay, what are the mistakes I've made in my career that I've learned from that have helped me be more informed of just even professional decisions I make in my career and in my role? And I feel like the first is being authentic. And I know that's so broad, and it's like, okay, well, I'm sure people are like, well, I'm authentic at work all the time, but you know, like, what does that really mean? And I think, especially starting out in my career, when I felt a significant level of imposter syndrome, and especially like in an entry level role, I mean, like I really did not do anything in the first role that I did at General Mills, but I feel like they made it seem like, oh, you have all these responsibilities and they're so important. But like, I mean, you're just there to learn. You're really there to be a sponge. So I felt like I had to act a certain way, and I felt like that kind of carried over when I also transitioned into tech. And it really took me a long time to just be myself, but also share my opinion. Because it took like a few times before my opinions felt like they were being heard. And then there were other voices that were like, oh yeah, I felt that same way. Or like, yeah, I kind of recognized that too in that conversation. And that has just really helped boost my confidence. So I would say the first is like lessons learned is just like be authentic. And I feel like the younger generation is way more confident than at least like I was, you know, 10 years ago. So I'm like, props to you guys. You guys learned it way faster than I did. But I think the other is like taking advantage of your network. I mean, I remember when we worked together, you reached out to me and you were like, hey, like, I think you just like found my name in the org chart, and you were like, this, you're on the team that I want to interview for. Like what tips can you give me? And like, it is insane. And I feel like we hear it all the time, but it is so true that that is so rare. People, I think, just assume like, oh, I'm just like one of many people who are interviewing for this job or like interested, or like, oh, they're too busy. And I think what I loved about our experience at that company is that it really fostered a culture of just like welcoming any and all people. And yeah, like anyway, all that to say, like, I did not do that when I first started interviewing for jobs. And I really thought like, oh, they're too busy, and like, I don't want to bother them. And, you know, I know this, I'd always make like so many excuses. And it wasn't until I just finally started reaching out to people that I realized like, oh wait, no. Yeah. Like, people love to talk about themselves. Second off, people love to give advice. So as long as you frame it in like, hey, you seem like you have great advice to give me, like people will be more than willing to talk. So I think that, I don't remember which one that was, but that would be my second. I think that was the lesson. But yeah. And then like, I think, as I've done the SE role for now almost, I think, like half of my career in tech at least, I think what I've learned is it's okay if you don't know everything. And I think especially being in a customer success role, I mean, you can attest to this too. It's like our customers expect us to know everything about the product. And it's like, if you don't, then that's bad on you. And that's like bad on the company. But in pre-sales, I feel like it's totally different. It's more about like, let's figure out a solution together. And sure, you can ask all your technical questions that you want, but how important actually is that? And then let's figure out prioritization of the answers. So that was another little bit of a tangent, but I would say being comfortable with not knowing the answer to everything. Because I think even early in my career, I just assumed like, oh my gosh, if they're coming to me, they assume I know everything already. And that's like never the case, I'm realizing as I've gotten older. So I think those are my lessons.
It's such a thing. I mean, relationships, the value, right? That is what...
We can just scratch the entire podcast about relationships.
When we're having these conversations, I'm always like, what am I going to title this for, like, the, like, you know, name of the episode? And like, that relationships is definitely going to be one important part of this title.
Whether you intended that to happen, that's...
Hey, things happen as they should. You know, this co-creation, right?
There you go. Oh my God. Here we are.
I love how you talked about, like, you know, I reached out to you and I was looking to join the solution engineering team, right? And that was a way of me understanding, me learning from you, me getting like an advocate for me and the team, and halfway understanding like if this was the right move for me as well, because at the time 100%. I was in success. But that is human. That is sales. In sales terms, people will refer to that as multi-threading, right?
Yes.
If we have a deal, we're going to make sure that I don't just have one person I have a relationship with, that I understand inclusion. I have an inclusive perspective of the organization. That way I can take and provide value to each person I'm talking to make a decision, right? Yep. Whether that's a sales deal or that's life, like if you're presenting, that's even politics to some degree, which is amazing about Daniel Pink. Daniel Pink, the wrote to Sales Human, isn't a salesperson, he's in politics.
Yep.
You're trying to make sure you have the right votes whenever you're presenting to a group of people. So definitely a relationship focused aspect that has been helpful for me in my career. And it sounds like it's been helpful for you too. And in terms of just knowing everything in the SC role, like that is what I tell people all the time, is like SC isn't anywhere as technical as people think it is. And the weird thing is each organization is different. Like there are definitely some organizations that are like super high tech you have to be like really, like you're almost developing. And that's the weird thing about the SC role, is like SC stands for either sales engineer or solution engineer. And it's a whole spectrum of what that could mean in responsibilities, but it's not always technical.
Right, exactly. And there's like a million different titles, right? So
yeah,
I've been a solution engineer, and then some people call it sales engineer. And then I've also been a solution consultant or a sales consultant. And like, I like that title a little better only because it's like, it doesn't have like the misleading engineering word in it. Cause I feel like when people hear engineering, they're like, oh, like you must know how to code or develop. And I'm like, I would be the first to admit I am the least technical person. I have no technical experience. I'm not going to pretend like I do. There's definitely a spectrum for sure. I mean, if you're selling like middleware software that like integrates with a million different things, I would hope that you're technical for sure. But it's crazy how this is very much a relational type of position, but that's why I've loved it so much. So
there is definitely some product or solution need, right? To the solution engineer, right? Just the first solution or sales part. But to your point, it's definitely not as technical. And I love how you talked about, you know, talking to the value. Like if someone brings up the question of, hey, like how important is that for your organization? Are you asking this just because you want to know, or you're asking this because it's going to be impactful? Okay, how do we measure that impact, right? Is that X amount of dollars or X amount of time? Or is this just like, yeah, I'd love to do it. Okay, well, we'll put that a little bit lower on the list and we can double back there when we need to. Like those are those critical thinking skills you talked about that help anyone be successful in any type of role there.
Yes. Well, and some people are just like super inquisitive, and I feel like it's really easy to assume, oh, well, they asked a lot of questions like say about our technology. And I mean, I've worked with plenty of reps that are like, oh, well, they, you know, like they did their research and they asked this, this, and this. And it's like, okay, well, but what value does it tie back to? And like of this laundry list of items that we've answered, what's actually priority? Like, let's bring it back to the whole point of why we're having this conversation. And like the SE role taught me that just like I don't know, mental judo of like making sure I'm getting to the right point. But it's been, I mean, it's so to like the point you even made earlier, like just sales infiltrating every single aspect of our life. Like, yeah, it's why I've loved this role. I mean, I feel like I'm like touting it so much, but it's why I really appreciate it, because I feel like I have grown as just like a mature adult too, and how to like navigate adult conversations without it feeling aimless or pointless, I guess. So
the fact you do that shows that you're incredibly talented. Because some people segment, that's what, you know, many reasons why we have this podcast as well, is like some people segment their life, whether it's like work me versus life me, right?
Oh, and I used to be that for sure.
So me too. I was like, I can't be married.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
No, it's just amazing how that growth happens. And the more you can be, as you mentioned, authentic, do the right thing, and like integrate to be that one person, not just the better you are at work, but the better you are in life, because you learn that what we do is ultimately just solving problems and helping people find their why and get to their why. So,
yeah. Well, something you said about the inclusion that it just like sparked in my brain is when you include everyone and bring in unique thoughts and ideas, like you then avoid groupthink, because while, yep, yes, everyone loves, or I'll speak for myself, I love validation and I love, yeah, feeling like I'm being seen and heard 100%. But there's also something to be said about like the counter perspective or just a unique idea. And that's really, yeah, where I feel like growth and development happens. And that's what I constantly seek when, like, even professionally and personally, like what can I learn from? Not that every relationship needs to be self-serving, but I mean, yeah, especially in a professional world, like I want to maintain relationships with people that, you know, help me grow and think differently, but not to say that those people who think like me are not valuable, because they are amazing. And I feel like I also leverage therapy for that, but anyway, a little bit of an aside, but yeah, just the avoidance of groupthink. 'Cause I think that it's easy to fall into that. And I feel like making sure everyone's heard and included is very critical. So
it's so important. Like, you know, in terms of groupthink in sales, right, one of the biggest things that we can do is make sure that every person has their voice heard and included, mm-hmm, when you're making a decision that frankly impacts everyone with the organization. In life, you can't really do well with speaking to a group if you don't know everyone that's in the group.
Right.
Like it's so weird to your part about even introvert or extrovert, right? Like if you go to a vacation with a group of friends, it's a very different experience if you know every single person on that vacation versus I know three people of these eight. Like though, that's a completely different thing, dude. Well,
it's like bachelor and bachelorette parties, right? It's like most of the exactly time you know everybody. So yep, you don't know what the outcome is going to be, but you can, I mean, you can't control the outcome, but you can shape the, yeah, outcome by being inclusive or not.
Yeah, you have to count the votes, for lack of a better word, yeah, right? And you mentioned just talking about the why and the value in selling there. You've won awards for your demoing styles and storytelling. This is real. You've won multiple awards for this stuff. How do you do that, right? Because I think that is one of your superpowers as well there. Obviously, you have the critical thinking, but when it comes down to, we understand who this person is, who the organization is, why they're here, what they want to get to, the value they're going to have as a payoff, the next thing is communicating that. How do I get from where we are today to all this other stuff you promised me? And you do that better than I think anyone I've met there. So yeah, how you kind of think about that demoing, as we like to call it in a human term, storytelling component of it?
Yeah. Well, first off, I am flattered you remembered. I don't want to work for that. So I have to attribute the structure and how I storytell. I am of the mindset that like imitation is the highest form of flattery. I think that's the quote. So I am not here to pretend like I'm making things on my own or, you know, like I am original whatsoever. I'm actually, while I have like an artsy side, I'm actually like not very creative at all. I get inspiration from other people's ideas. Yeah. So I share all of that because it started with, and maybe Demo to Win can sponsor us, but Demo to Win training. I mean, it was the first time I felt like I got formal training of like structurally, this is what you want to get from discovery. And with this information, this is how you frame the story. So you're not just sitting in front of the technology and clicking through for like 20, 30 minutes, because I just thought that's like what you're supposed to demo. And so I know people have an adverse reaction to Slideware. I am actually, especially in a remote environment, like, okay, death by PowerPoint, but I am actually a huge proponent of Slideware because you can send a very powerful message by just having the right language or the right words on a slide. Now, you can also confuse people and overwhelm them with like way too many words. So I feel like that in and of itself could be its own masterclass that like, again, I am not great at it. I just kind of like steal from templates and use what I've seen before. But for the most part, structurally, I really follow that like demo to win slash like tell, show, tell of like, okay, here's what we heard. Let me show you how it's done. And then let's reinforce what I just shared with you. And so while that's kind of like the more technically term of like the structure that I follow, that's kind of like the foundation I live by when I am demoing to any customer. I always try to make sure that I'm not coming in blind. And I mean, there's always going to be those instances where I can't have an initial conversation or really unpack what they're looking for. And sometimes you just have to demo and get that information on the fly. But I think like at the foundation, it's really been that demo to win structure. And then even in thinking about like talking to people and I mean, hopefully this is being experienced on this podcast, but I also feel like repetition and ensuring you kind of like tie back to the point of the like original comment at the beginning, like reinforcing what you mean, I feel like is often, I don't know, maybe sometimes it's seen as like patronizing or it's like, oh, they'll probably remember that. But like if I can dumb things down or simplify it or translate it to layman's terms, I'm like, I will do that. And I will repeat it at least 3 times. So I won't repeat it the exact same way, but to reinforce something that's important. So yeah, short answer, demo to win, best training I've ever gotten as an SE 100%. And then I think as far as storytelling too, there is the structure or like the formula of like, there's always like the protagonist and then they go through a challenge, they overcome the challenge and then they have, you know, the resolution at the end. And then I think like in, you know, like a former employer, like one of the things I do remember them saying that I always try to make sure is in the back of my mind as well is the person or the group that gains the most value in the story is your customer's customer. So in B2B sales, you know, it's not the business that gains the value. It's really their either constituents or it's their beneficiaries or it's their customers. And so I think having that at the forefront of the story also makes a huge difference. And depending on your audience too, you got to make sure you're catering to the right audience. But yeah, those are my at least pro tips. I can like dive in a little bit more if people have questions, but
you dropped gems, true honest gems, for that, for any, whether you consider yourself an SE or solutions consultant, or frankly, even an AE like that. That was the entire gym, right? One is communication, right? People think demos are like, what demos should not be is you clicking through that like technical presentation, right? Yeah. Some of the best demos, as you put, have been literally slides, right? They tell a very compelling story. And you're able to do that if you're able to communicate in a very strong way, using, you know, this person's language, using, making things human, like speaking someone's language. Literally, like, people accept you more because you're using and referring to the things that we use and refer to, right? So doing that with a customer just feels so much better. And doing that, to your point, which I just adore, in a simplified way, because there's so many things in tech and life and just where we're at today with just how busy things are.
Yeah,
I will pay someone to simplify. So, and many customers will pay someone to simplify something for them.
I mean, isn't that what AI is for too? Like, I can't tell you how many times I go to
literally
Gemini or like Bear, Google, whatever, to be like, "What is this?" and tell me the answer. Really quick while on that, one other thing that I forgot to add is connection and relationships. So like always weaving in some sort of personal story that like you can tell authentically that really brings out emotion in the story. And so I'll use an example. One of my close friends and also someone I consider a mentor. I remember the first time we ever interacted was in this like boot camp or like training. We both kind of started at the same time. And I remember she shared a story about her personal experience with a nonprofit and the challenge she experienced. And her whole demo was how the technology could solve for that problem that she experienced. And I mean, it has been years now since she, and this was like an exercise we had to do at boot camp. But it was just, it was incredible. And like, I've just never really seen anyone present like that. So while I appreciate, you know, like your compliments on my storytelling, like I feel like she's like the pinnacle. So
we've got to have her on the podcast one day, maybe, because the way you've told her stories is amazing. In terms of just like, what you mentioned with telling stories, the format of tell, show, tell is so important, I think, because it refers to just the best ways to listen, right? A joke we always make on some of these episodes is like, hey, some of the best things we've learned as professionals are things we learned from our therapist. So best therapists will typically refer back to what they think you said. Hey, you said this is what I heard. Then you'll start to dive into the solution and then kind of anchor back on the why. And that's what demoing is tell, show, tell. And to kind of wrap it up as well, is like you have to put that personal touch in there that you mentioned, right?
It's what people remember.
It's what people remember. That, like, there's so many people I have, and this isn't trying to be a flex, so that there's a number of people I have on my LinkedIn or even Facebook or any social media, right? And I can't remember where I met every person, but even with me looking at someone's profile and their name, I have like some connection like of that relationship or interaction with them. So I don't remember where we met or what was said or whatever, but I was like, this person, last time I remember them, made me feel positive. This person, I don't know if I'm from my friend list anymore. And that's exactly what demos does. They're going to walk away remembering how you made them feel.
Yes, 100%. I mean, I get it too. Well, it's like a bold move, right? Like sometimes I can't say if the same applies for like the financial industry or maybe like more of like people in an IT or technical field, but in my experience, like I'm often presenting to either sales organizations or even like business development. And I feel like they very much get it too, because it's like very relational, strategic. And so they want to hear the story. And I feel like I've gotten really lucky in having stories land. Well, there have been plenty of stories that haven't landed. So, you know, this is not like perfect over here, but yeah, I've learned for sure from, some of the demos that have gone wrong as well. So yeah.
Those are the ones you often learn the most from, right?
I mean, I learn the most from all of the mistakes that I make, and I would not trade any of them for the world for sure.
Well, I know we're getting towards the end of the episode here. We usually end with just the three C's of clarity, connection, and co-creation. The values have been helpful for me throughout my career, and I kind of anchor on in life and in professional work, right? In terms of clarity, right, a lot of what we talked about is helping people find their why, helping customers, again, as you mentioned, you know, I want to learn about this feature. You know, why? Mm-hmm. How is that going to be important? What's that going to do for anyone? Yeah. How do you help people clarify, particularly customers clarify, what's important to them and what they should be focusing on?
This is going to be a very broad answer, but I'll try to pair it with examples. But another reason why I've really enjoyed my SE role is because it has taught me how to ask good questions. And good questions doesn't necessarily mean super complex or, you know, super thoughtful. It can just be direct. Like sometimes a customer will say something and I'll just ask like, oh, what do you mean by that? And I think if I were to have told myself that 10 years ago, I'd be like, I can't ask that to a professional. Like, are you crazy? But it's to your point earlier and throughout this entire podcast, it's bringing that human element of like, we are people trying to solve a problem. And Like, there's no hierarchy here. It's just, you know, co-creating a solution. So I think it's just making sure to be, for me, it's being direct and feeling comfortable in ensuring that I can ask those right questions. I will say the luxury and kind of like beauty of the SE role is that you've got the AE to kind of like start with the questions and get a feel for how the customer is going to answer them. And so I always just kind of feed off that energy and get the vibe to see like, okay, how direct can I be? Can I ask a clarifying question? Are they, you know, like open to providing an honest response, or are they a bit tight-lipped? So yeah, that's definitely my approach. But all that to say, being clear and I think just asking the direct questions and just making sure that I understand the response as well. A lot of things I see great reps do is repeat back what a customer has asked as far as like the value or what they're looking for. And I think that's just such a master move, because it makes it kind of like is also a CYA mm-hmm. exercise too, right? Because it's like, mm-hmm. okay, here's what I heard, and I'm repeating it back to you to make sure you know that's what I heard. So when we come back with a solution, like, we're pointing back to this receipt.
I love the receipts perspective, because you can't ever validate people's why enough, I think, in life or sales processes, right? 100%. Starting the meeting with, hey, we're here because you want to accomplish X, Y, and Z. Is that accurate? Do we still want to do that? Is there new things here? Ending the meeting with that, hey, the next call, we're going to do X, Y, and Z because we're solving this why. And even when you're anchoring on that, this is, you know, moving from the SE role to the AE role, and you asking maybe those tough questions. A good AE hopefully provide you space to ask those questions, right? People always say the AE is like the quarterback, and I think the analogy I always prefer is like a director for a movie, because it's, you know, hey, you put this person to say this right thing. So it's like, hey, Connie, you have this title, right? I'm human, but I realize that some people respect titles more than ever. Can you ask this question, because I respect you saying it more than I will.
I love that mentality, because it's more the orchestration of the right resources. Yeah. And yeah, AEs don't have to be, while they are kind of like the face of the company to the customer, they don't have to be the one that takes up the most space in the room. So I love that.
You got to make sure you get people the area they can shine in on their scripted scene, right? It's like, hey, this person's great at X, Y, and Z storytelling. Why would I not make sure Connie has a great spot to storytell in this session, right? In terms of connection, what do you see typically resonates best with customers for connecting things? People use anything from data to storytelling to, as you just mentioned, your shared experiences there. What do you typically use to provide that connection for customers?
Yeah, I was thinking about my response, and I'm going to give you the typical SE response of it depends, but I'll give more context around that. So it comes with research, right? So if it's maybe like a first call and I haven't met these people, I'll do as much, you know, like Google/LinkedIn research I can about these people. Or if an AE's already met with them, figuring out, okay, what's their style? What's their preference? Because there's more of the data minded people. There's more of the pragmatic people. There's more of the, you know, like, abstract people too. So just knowing kind of like how their style and like what their preferred approach is. So doing as much research as I can, and then just tailoring it to that audience. And usually that works really well for me. But there have been ranges of customers that I have not connected with. And then there are ones that, you know, like have called me their best friend, which is very sweet, but kind of crazy too, because it's like through a virtual screen. But totally an aside. But it's just like, I feel like active listening and then also kind of tailoring. I am the type of person that like tries to get a read for people before I come in guns blazing with my personality, which I mean, I feel like my personality anyway generally is pretty amenable, but now I'm going on a very long tangent. But all that to say, like, I definitely try to read the room and exercise a level of empathy, and then, you know, delivering like either the information or whatever I need to deliver at that time. So, summarize that, but
it depends is the best answer, right? Cause it goes to the last value of like that co-creation, right? one of the things that I found most helpful, and I've worked with a couple of people on this, some of my mentees, is like, you never want to demo. This is your big deal, right? You never want that demo you're doing to maybe be the first time you're demoing to that customer, especially if you have an actual champion that's selling for you or supporting you, right? Yep. So to your point about, hey, maybe sometimes it's data, sometimes it's storytelling, sometimes it's this, sometimes it's that. In multi-threading and having an inclusive evaluation, hopefully you have some insight into what's going to resonate the most and what people respect and use to make the decisions that we can tailor or co-create that with them there.
I mean, and this is exactly why SEs hate going into first call without discovery and jumping right into demo. Cause it's like, we don't have the context to really deliver a meaningful story if it's our first conversation and we're just getting to know them. I mean, like, we don't even know what they're expecting. So it's pretty much going in blind. So yeah.
It's going to the doctor. I'm like, I need a prescription for this. Why?
Exactly.
What do you have going on?
Yeah. I mean, so many of this can relate to real life. So totally agree.
Last C is co-creation. How do you create a co-create a inclusive path to success, right? A lot of times you'll have a way from point A to point B, but it's one thing to just, as we mentioned, come in that first demo and say all the things and hope it resonates. It's kind of a better thing to figure out, hey, what journey do people want to go on and kind of even plan for some hiccups along the way. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of think about that side of things?
I'm going to tie it back to my core value of trust. Establishing trust by, if there's fallout as far as like questions or action items from like an initial conversation, delivering on what I said I was going to deliver on, whether it's an answer, whether it's a follow-up conversation, always committing to whatever I have promised. So I think like establishing trust in that way through action and then active listening. So it kind of ties back to, you know, like how, I forget what the question was, but like how you tailor a conversation or how you build trust with customers, I guess. And it's through active listening and just making sure like, okay, the customer feels heard and that I'm delivering on what they have said and expressed are their priorities. So I would say those are the two main ones. And then, I mean, like, it's kind of crazy just like how, and I think you even may have mentioned this on a podcast that you did with one of your other guests slash hosts, just around how like sometimes sales can be a therapy session. And it's like, I mean, sometimes customers sometimes just want to get stuff off their chest. And like, if you give them the space to do that, I feel like that pays dividends. So also providing that as well. Kind of helping with that co-creation, I guess.
I love that perspective. It's so much similar to therapy and that active listening is important. Delivering on promises builds trust, and that's important. I think that's on both sides. I mean, one of the things I always talk to my, you know, mentees and team on in terms of qualification is that, you know, any relationship value is a partnership. So whether that be in life or in sales or whatever, you know, levels of relationship it is, you know, both sides have to be doing things. So I'm very big on making sure that mutual plan, as you end calls or customers, everyone understands what's going to be delivered on the next call. And if there isn't, right, that tells you how serious things are. That could be even from the customer side. Like, so if you're a customer and you're dealing with a technology company or whatever company, and they're not delivering what you've asked for, that's telling. And vice versa for customers to be aware for companies. Like, hey, if we're asking for these certain things, access or just plans, and you're not delivering, that's telling for us of maybe how serious or your why of what this is. So
I mean, we didn't even get
on that is important.
Like accountability, holding your customers accountable too. Again, like we are both humans on each side. So while yes, we are trying to influence and sell you something, it's not one-sided. It's mutual. So I think holding your customers accountable too is huge. And that co-creation of that success plan or mutual action plan is inclusive of that. Like, it's not just us tracking a checklist. Like, it's very much, okay, customer, you bringing all the things you need to bring your homework to the table. So
co-creation is both the gift and a responsibility.
Yes.
Well, I can't say how much I appreciate you, Connie, for coming in, telling us about your journey, your lessons, your values, dropping amazing gems for any SCs or AEs listening in here as well. Thank you. I really genuinely appreciate you. What can we give back to Connie now that you've shared so much with us?
Oh my gosh. I don't even know. I mean, I feel like just if like anyone's listening to this, like that's enough for me. Like just, you know, hearing my story and giving me the platform to even just share a lot of this information. I really appreciate it. And I also appreciate our friendship. And I've learned so much from you just, you know, being able to bring you on to our former team and then also just being able to see this incredible career progression you've made. So not to make this a shower of compliments on both sides, but I do really admire you. So
great friendships include people giving other people flowers. So I think we're just passing flowers back and forth. I'm going to pass it to you and run out the room. Well, I appreciate you so much, Connie. Thank you for joining in. Maybe we'll have another episode here soon to dive into some more things, but I really just appreciate the conversation and episode today.
Yeah, likewise. It was great to be here. Thanks so much, Myron.
Thank you. Wait, friend, before you move on, take the time to gift yourself the Sea of Clarity or Community. With so many pulls for our time and attention today, one of the best gifts we can gift ourselves is a moment to simply breathe and be present, to gently process our experiences, emotions, and thoughts with grace and non-judgment. To do this, take the next 2 remaining minutes of today's episode to practice simply paying attention to yourself, or maybe gift yourself and or others community by connecting with us online. You can thank today's guest, share your experience and lessons, or connect with others as well. To do this, go to the website c3.community or our C3 Community LinkedIn page, or of course, our YouTube channel. As always, friend, thank you for listening in and for choosing to be a part of our community. We hope you take a few precious moments for yourself. See you soon.